the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Nano prajna paramita kriyaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts, the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts: not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here to end suffering.
If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
So what should we look at this morning?
I went back over a recording I made that I referred to several times. I mean, as I was walking down the road the other day prior to making the presentation, and that I found hugely valuable to review. And I feel like I saw another piece, a really big old piece.
A big old old piece of your conditioning?
Yeah. So what I talked about on Thursday night was what I do is invite anybody who had concerns about this presentation I was going to make to speak in. So I talked about mostly the five-year-old who spoke and was really concerned about approval and seeing that play out now in my life. But I felt like as I listened to it again the other day, I felt like I saw a whole other level of connection that felt deeper. And when the older people checked in, as I was making this recording, what they were concerned about was appearing foolish. Mm-hmm. It was making a presentation. It's about a particular kind of issue, having that challenged, and then having no response, having no way kind of to defend themselves, mm-hmm. you know, and so appearing foolish.
So, you made this recording prior to giving a presentation, and you were aware of a very young part that felt scared mm-hmm. about giving a presentation, but then there were some other aspects of personality or parts that felt afraid of being foolish
yeah.
that you felt were a little bit older.
Yeah, quite a bit older.
Quite a bit older.
Yeah. And so, what I got to in that was that that if I could just speak from the heart, mm-hmm. which is what puts me in this place anyway, where I want to make this presentation, that I could be okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really what I was going to come from. But there are these layers over that about saying it right or you mm-hmm. know coming off well or being able to defend. So I saw all that. And then when I listened to it the other night, I heard a whole other little piece, which was the five-year-old recalled that when she was five, she was in kindergarten, she hung out with the boys because they had all the fun. And so at recess, all the boys and Penny would go charging out the door, you know, and we'd run down to this, there's a valley on the property of the school, and we'd run down there, and we'd run around, and we'd play really hard, and I loved it, you know. And everybody on my street I played with was a boy because that's all that was on my street. And so what the five-year-old said is, and then she remembered around that age, I'm guessing it was a year or two later, walking into the girls' room, and there were two girls in my class who were very popular girls. And when she, when I walked in, this little five-year-old walked in at first, but then maybe seven. What she remembered was they looked at her, and they said, oh, there's that girl. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that memory sticks, you know, 60 years later. And what the little five-year-old said on the tape was, there wasn't anything I could do to defend myself. I was just doing things I liked. Mm-hmm. And it felt like that was kind of one of those moments when she got it that she was not okay as she was. Mm-hmm. You know, that it was not okay simply to be who she was. Mm-hmm. And that there was a real helplessness around, feeling like she somehow had to make it okay, mm-hmm. and couldn't. Mm-hmm. So what I suspect is that what was going on for the older people who feel like they want to have the last word and they want to win the argument, mm-hmm. is that same thing. Mm-hmm. That I'm speaking from the heart. And deep down, there's some conviction that that's not okay. You know, it's not sufficient. Mm-hmm. I have to find some way to defend it. Mm-hmm. And when I can't, I think that old vulnerability is touched into.
Mm-hmm. What just came up for me now is wondering if, like, the older parts were even trying to protect that younger one, you know, by having the last word.
Oh, yeah, I think so.
And coming up with something to say.
And I think trying to find a way around that awful sense of vulnerability. I was thinking that adult person making this presentation, that what I think is goes on is that someone's in the audience saying, "Oh, there's that person," mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and there's that goes back that far. And I just felt so helpful to see mm-hmm. that possible mm-hmm. connection and how. And why it would feel so vulnerable. Mm. And it just gave me a lot of compassion for all those parts, you know, mm. who do what we do as human beings, which is try to contend with the message that we're not okay as we are, mm. and find some way to make it okay.
Mm. It sounds like you were, able to get that kind of arm's width or length from it to really see with compassion mm-hmm. what was going on in that situation. And you talked about, you know, coming from the heart and not being in the heart, being that place of compassion with room for that fearful part and for also the parts that want to have the last word. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and as I listen to it several times now, every time it feels like I'm getting more of that arm's, it's funny, so it's that arm's length that brings you closer.
It is interesting.
Yeah. So it feels like that. It's really a testament to the richness of the recording practice, because every time I listen to it, I hear another layer.
Yeah, that came up for me too. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That you're recording and you can listen to it much like you would listen to a guidance tape or, you know, just with a mentor and just having different layers revealed with each listening.
Yeah, and without the recording, I couldn't do that.
Right.
I don't think I've ever gotten back to that.
Yeah.
Even if I'd said it, I wouldn't have heard it again.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, that brings up for me an experience I had actually last night with a little person in me who I felt like I saw in a different way than I had before. So I have this this probably oldest aspect of the personality that was ever identified, even before I knew that in the context of this practice. And she has gone by the name of Safe Sally all these years, because she is the part of me that is trying to put on the best face on everything and be as good as she can be to avoid disaster, avoid disapproval, avoid anger, avoid sadness, avoid life, mm-hmm. basically, I think, you know. And the picture I drew of her, oh, so many years ago, way many years ago, is like a picture I have of myself at what I project is about the same age. And she's wearing her Sunday outfit, her little blue coat and her sailor hat and patent leather shoes and white socks and white gloves and, you know, she's so clean and so good, and, you know, her mother's curled her hair just right, and she does not look happy at all.
But she's safe.
but everybody's happy with her, so, you know, things are cool. And So she's come up again lately a few times. She'd sort of gone into the background for a while, and she's been present lately. And so last night I was awake with one of my frequent recent spiritual opportunities that I have in the middle of the night, and so I was doing the practice of that was suggested to me of seeing it as welcoming a stranger. So when this happens lately, I've been just sort of saying, okay, I'm here, who's here? And last night it was her. And she showed up just sort of standing by the bed in her coat and hat and gloves and patent leather shoes. And I, you know, I said, so, you know, what's going on? And she said, can you please take these clothes off me? And I said, well, sure. You know, what would you like to wear instead? And so she created this outfit, and she said, I'm just so tired of having to hold it all together. And so we dressed her up in something much more comfortable, and she climbed into bed, and not long after that, I think I went to sleep. But, you know, she's very sweet. They all are. All those little kids are very sweet. And, you know, I just, you know, who knows? You know, at this point, I no longer think that what shows up when I invite the stranger has anything to do with what's going on with me when I wake up, but it's a great opportunity to learn to see something and learn something.
So taking this opportunity in the night when you can't sleep to just invite who's ever there to come in terms of an internal child or an internal aspect to come forward. Yeah. And what came up for me when you were talking about Safe Sally being there is the benefit of the relationship with those parts of ourselves, that they can be there and actually tell us what they need, and not be afraid to do that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it was just, I really appreciated that experience, and this is a whole different, well, I would say topic, but it's not. It was a different appreciation that I had this morning when I was out taking my walk. And whenever I go for a long walk down the road, I always listen to something on my recorder. And today I was listening to the group that I recorded Tuesday night when I facilitated. And I was just so appreciating seeing what happens over time, because there used to be a time when I would record facilitations and sort of listen to them holding my breath, you know, waiting to hear what I would say, and just kind of going, you know, grimacing and, you know, kind of being Safe Sally, braced against, oh God, did I make a fool of myself, you know, did I just do a royally bad job, and, you know, and I'd sort of grit my way all the way through it and get to the end and kind of go, oh, well, that wasn't that bad. You know? And I just realized this morning how none of that happens anymore. I just love listening to a recording of the group and hearing people talk and hearing me talk. And, you know, sometimes I say, well, that wasn't the smoothest thing to have said, you know? But there's just mostly just appreciating, wow, I got to listen to group all over again. You know, it's just, and that's just time, I mean, time and practice, I think, you know, just staying with it, hanging in there, doing the practice, listening to the recordings. And you know, it occurs to me as I'm saying that, to connect it with where I started, if I hadn't been hanging in there with Sally and those kids over time, she wouldn't have been able to come and say what she said to me.
And it's interesting that realization came this morning after her being present last night and saying, I'm tired of, you know, being in these clothes. Can you help me?
Yeah.
Can you get me out of them? And then this morning, just being able to listen to that recording and seeing, you know, seeing the change that's happened over time.
Yeah, you know, and I, you know, my long-standing struggle with the voices that tell me I'm, you know, about to die of some horrible disease, you know, is there's that same kind of bracing against something happening. You know, if I just somehow, I don't know what, if I just, then it won't, or, you know, or...
I just hold my breath.
It's something like that. It's like something like, if I just expect that it's going to happen and be looking for the symptoms, then I can, if it really was that, I could, I don't know. There's some kind of magical thinking going on there about if I'm, the words just keep coming up, braced against it, you know, and I think that's the one who's so tired of holding it all together, you know? I mean, I don't have anything to do with whether or not someday I might get a serious illness. I mean, I don't think I do. Maybe I do in a way, but there's nothing about being watchful for it happening that is going to keep it from happening.
Right, and that watching for it, you know, missing all of the life that's happening right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm in an interesting place right now where there's a part of me that clearly gets all that and it's just like, okay, what the hell, let's live. And then there's the other part that's still kind of hanging on for dear life, you know, like, well, yes, but yes, but what if? I mean, maybe, you know, I'm just watching myself go back and forth still between those two, and you know, more and more being on the side of just, oh well, nothing I can do about it, let's just have a good time. And I think to some degree that intensifies the other side sometimes.
Nothing I can do about it, let's just have a good time.
Thank you.
Amy, what's
your hands? I've also been looking at the benefits of recording and listening. I listened to a recording this morning recently, self-facilitating one morning, and really letting the person who woke up have her experience, and she was the one who didn't want to do what was in front of her to do that day. And then self-facilitating and then asking if there was someone who was willing to do it. And someone stepped up and was willing and had all her reasons for being willing. And so I walked out the door that morning a different person than the person who woke up. And it was powerful to experience and then to go back and listen to and watch that progression or listen to that progression.
You found it powerful to listen to it again this morning and watch that progression from the person that was, it sounds like, maybe afraid or resistant to what was in front of her, to finding the person that was willing to do that, and to actually then, it sounds like, walk out the door and with her to do what was in front of her, and just how powerful that was to listen to that progression.
Yeah, and to watch that movement, that shift, those different experiences.
And it sounds like being reminded, and just to be reminded that that shift is possible.
Yeah, it is helpful to be reminded that that shift is possible. and that, actually, that brings up something else I've been looking at, which is a number of processes that I've been looking at in different areas of my life, and the common thread that I'm seeing in all of them is that they're all ways of conditioning, trying to keep me isolated and separate. And whether it's those stories that are being fed about why I'm not reaching out to people, writing a letter to someone, and having it set up so that I have to, at this point, make the most beautiful card or write the most eloquent letter, or it somehow it has to compensate something instead of just writing, I miss you, not really want to connect. Mm-hmm. Or just, yeah, just all these ways that it's just set up to keep me isolated. I'm seeing a number of ways of the community that I live in, just ways of just to keep this person separate and isolated. So it's good to remember that there's a way to shift out that experience. Mm-hmm.
It seems really important and big to see, because that is the way that conditioning does its dirty work, to keep us isolated and separate. And just to be able to see how it does that, not only in this community, but in our relationships with friends and family, is good to see. Thank you. Melinda?
Well, this feels really helpful, because I'm seeing more of what I'm also looking at for myself, which is how that ultimate fear that I have is what I'm doing to myself internally.
That the ultimate fear that you have is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, someone's doing.
Yeah.
Internally.
Not belonging, not being approved of, being rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hearing that also this morning in what folks are saying, and that ultimately. I don't know about ultimately, but it goes on here first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes on internally, and in fact, probably wouldn't even be aware of it or notice it out there unless it wasn't going on internally.
Yes, yeah, and scan for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the process is one of, supposedly, and it's like, sure, we'll always say, yeah, perfectionist isn't a perfectionist, they're imperfectionist because they're looking for the flaws,
mm-hmm.
looking for the rejection, although the message from conditioning is that it's looking for approval, or it's looking for belonging, or it's looking for, when in fact it's not, it's looking for the thing that is most, that the being is most vulnerable to,
mm-hmm.
and picking that out and saying, see?
Yeah, again, creating
it's
that,
true.
That isolation, that separation.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I was also hearing, and I'm going to watch this more for myself, that the shields go up, but the wound happened mm-hmm. when I was five, or the wound happened mm-hmm. I so related to the five-year-old experience, and frequently, or sometimes a memory will come up of having been a little girl who only wanted to play with boys because they were the only one doing anything interesting, including what she would do would stand in the little boys line to go to the bathroom because that's where she belonged. And remembering about age five or six, the first grade teacher coming over and yanking her out of the line to say, you're in the wrong line. And she couldn't make any sense out of that, because who she was, she knew where she belonged, and it was there. And I think that that's been sort of it's a little snapshot of the struggle that continues to be there, and that is happening inside.
Yeah, that you're in the wrong line.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big message.
Yeah, and the one inside who says, no, you can't be that way. That's
right.
Not...
And yet knowing that's who you are, and then,
yeah,
you know, externally getting them.
Well, and they must know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
the original tilt.
Yeah. Thank you. Krista, do I see your hands?
Yeah. Is the conversation about the five-year-old, seeing the five-year-old that opened the window, and something that I'm working on and actively in right now, which is I have a relationship with the woman who does all the flyers and stuff for the studio.
Okay.
And it's not easy, the relationship. And what I realized is that, I mean, I take full responsibility, and I think the problem really began when I look at it in the beginning when she offered to do it, and I didn't make a quantity of, like, okay, you're doing this, what's the value? We have to make the trade really clear.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at why I didn't do that, it's that I didn't feel worthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that if I were to say, what's the value? What do you think, what are you bringing to the table? What am I bringing to the table? Let's make a clear trade here. That then that unworthiness would have shown up, would have been out in front. So I hid the unworthy feeling by not making it clear.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, it shows up in these other ways. So it's not, so then there's challenges in the relationship. And I shift then to this older person who's like, it needs to be this way. This doesn't. And the whole thing is so unfree for me. And I'm not, and I just see so many parts of conditioning it. The part that I always take responsibility, it's always sort of my fault. And then it's, except for when it goes too far, and then I'm like, you know, like a person with a hammer. And so none of it works. None of it works. No, I don't get what I want. When I do it right, I just did it right. I got all the information to work. I don't know, the middle of the month, maybe like the 18th. So here we are on the 30th, and I don't have anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the position, like, having to say, for the fifth time, I need this.
Mm-hmm.
And then feeling bad, and I mean, it's all this whole cycle of ickiness,
mm-hmm.
which stems from that whole first thing of feeling unworthy and hiding it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I see in this conversation is, I never looked at what's the age of the person who feels unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And like to see what's the age of the person then who comes in, and then what about this other person made that part of me feel so unworthy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is it that does that? I don't know. I haven't seen that part yet.
You know, what she represented to you, and just seeing how it, you know, how that this was a very young part, maybe at the beginning of this relationship when it was getting set up, that was unable to set the kind of parameters that would be needed for an ongoing healthy, it sounds like a ongoing healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And what just came up for me, I was just wondering if you've done any, it might be something useful to do some self-facilitation around, you know, just talking to this five-year-old and mentoring with the recorder, seeing what she has to say.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's what made me see that there could be, I could get a little more freedom around it, because right now I'm just stuck.
Right.
And what recently, you know, I'm a twin, so I have the advantage of getting to see my condition reflected quite closely. And my sister recently said something like, I always assume it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a like ding ding ding, because I do the exact same thing. So I always assume that, and then if you take away the assumption, there's just the facts. The facts are, I keep getting the information out there early. The facts are, I keep asking. The facts are, I'm in this position where then I'm having to, you know, basically live out all this crappy karmic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And But that it's all, but I, it's always seeing it as always my fault keeps the whole thing in place.
Right, this whole belief system keeps it in place. That, you know, and there's no freedom in it. That it's your fault, and you know that's just laid on top of some facts that don't have any and don't really mean anything or don't.
Right, which then keep that sort of that duality of the unworthy young person staying in that, you know, living out that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Except for when it goes too far and then she's like the older person and the hammer.
Right.
And then feels bad and goes back to being unworthy.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just.
And then there's this person who somehow now steps out and can see the dysfunction within it, mm-hmm. but that's not the same as having freedom.
Exactly. And I don't know what that came up for me too. It's just like the battering cycle, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, this thing goes on, and, you know, I'm going to do it different next time. And
right, and then I do it different, but I get the same results.
Right.
I don't get what I want.
Right.
It's not clean.
Yeah.
You know, is it? So it seems like the chance, I mean, there's a lot of chances, but the chance that we're looking at right now would be to see if I could do some self-facilitation with that part of me who's the unworthy part, because that's the underpinning structure of the whole mm-hmm. thing. And that's where it all went awry.
Yeah, to imagine going into the beginning of a relationship, you know, holding her hand or not even having to take her in, you know, to look and see who could go into the relationship as an adult, or how can you access center and at the beginning of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Could I reflect back what you said?
Mm-hmm.
To inquire, I think I didn't get it right,
okay.
So to inquire how I could could you say it again?
Well, it just came up. It's just to look at ways to take care of that 5-year-old, and which may come up in the self-facilitation. You know, that could be with the recorder, that could be two chairs, but just look at ways that you can take care of her, and then to just have that in your awareness. So when you go into a situation with a new, like the start of a new relationship, to have built that relationship with her so that, you know, you can, like, hold her in compassion, or, you know, just kind of, she doesn't have to feel like she's thrown out there mm-hmm. to be the one setting up the relationship.
Yeah. So to do some facilitation where she could be heard, so I could see her and take care of her, so she's not the one who's out there feeling vulnerable and having to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting us into situations where...
It's just been my experience. I mean, you know, young parts of my, you know, have come up and they're not being taken care of, and, you know, they find themselves foisted into doing things that they're just not adequate to.
Not equipped for.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Alex.
Interesting. I'm looking at young parts too. I have a young part that feels like a stump, that is wants to do everything. I mean, literally everything. Like, there's so much in life to do.
Like life is so
big.
Fun. He wants to
yeah.
do everything.
Because I remember when I was small, I would run for a long time, playing all sorts of games with everybody on the, you know. And then when I got back, I would play some more, you know, with the people in my neighborhood. Then when they weren't around, I would just hang out by myself, coming up with stuff. And, you know, I had all this, you know, like, just a stick would inspire to be a spaceship. You know, just amazing how, you know, vivid it is, you know. And we had these glass, I don't know what they were, like panes for the shower, you know, where you slowly slide back and forth, but you couldn't see through them completely, you know, they had this. So that was like the force field, you know, the same with that. And it, would just spend hours doing stuff like that until I conk out at night and go wake up and start all over again. And it's funny that it feels like that part's coming up now. Although he's always run into there's not enough time to do everything, or I'm afraid I'm going to miss out on something, which is like the little twist on all of it, which seems to come up a little bit recently, in that, and then like I remember I would watch this movie that I loved so much. I think it was the original King Kong. And I was lying in bed. It was on TV at night. It was before you could just pop in a videotape.
It just happened to be on the late night channel.
Exactly. It's just like it was at night, and I remember lying there in bed with the TV right there in front of me, and I'd have to like stop myself from blinking because I didn't want to miss something. Just really vividly remember that. And. So a lot of that feels like it's coming up recently, and the other obstacle is the adults, because they had ideas about how much energy I should actually have and what I should do when it's time to stop,
how you should channel it, yeah.
When it's time to eat, and you know, and just little annoyances like that. So I'm working on finding a middle ground with this part, because what happens is that I don't want to say, I think it just needs a big buddy, like a mentor, somebody who can actually listen to him rather than throwing up obstacles or expectations. Or because what conditioning does is it comes in and makes something out of something, and all of a sudden it's a what was fun before turns into, well, now it's got to be like this from now on, or makes it into a challenge, or because I've noticed that it's like, okay, love to draw, love to do, and it's like, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? It's got to look like that, and it's all of a sudden starts becoming this regimented thing, and so I'm starting something. And it feels like it's really fun. I'm energized by it, and all of a sudden it's like, you need this, you need to do that, you need to do that. It's like just starts branching off into this thing, and I just need the support of someone who can actually direct that in a way that it stays fun.
It sounds like something that you're aware of not really having as a young person, that kind of... somebody taking his hand and saying, wow, this is great. Mm-hmm. You know, this is great energy. Look what we can do with it.
That's right.
You know, and this is how we can direct it, and, you know, and I'm here with you. And
Yeah, just an encouragement also. It's really brand new, so I'm just looking at how to work with it at this moment. Just the kinds of things that he would need to know, to remember. What would assist him? Mm-hmm. Encouragement with the energy and how to use it, and all the things that conditioning will try to use to throw up that will divert it, stop it, turn it into something that it isn't. Traps, you know, like just things like that.
You have to, you know. This comes up as, you know, I've heard from Sherry say that, gosh, there's these really, I mean, wonderful, interesting aspects of the personality inside of us, and there's so much they can, you know, give us to enrich our lives.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like he is really, you know, one example of that.
Yeah. I want to keep him at the forefront of what it is that I'm doing, because I think that he has a lot to offer. Mm-hmm. It's just that there's all these ways in which he was not okay that starts to come up, or there's always a little bit of asking, is it okay? You know, like, and I'm waiting for an answer that never comes, and he's just kind of like just sitting around, well, what's going on? feel like there's a little holding back going on.
Yeah, just checking it out.
Yeah. Right. So it might be something to encourage him with that part too, like about what's okay and what's not, and what he feels about that.
Well, it just came up. I just happened to know that we share the same number on the Enneagram. And I know, like, just karmically, there's that predisposition to kind of watch and see, well, how's everybody else doing it? You know,
yeah, is there an opening for this?
Is this an opening?
Is this okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because part of it could be rocking the boat and just the things that I've learned over the years about how to manage that and conditioning to. And looking for a way to see how I'm connected already. And it would just be an interesting time, I think.
Yeah. Sounds like more, going to be a busy afternoon with recording and self-facilitating or doing the
teaching. Well, I have two reflective listening calls.
Good opportunity.
To expend a little energy there, just to practice.
Yeah.
So I have some practice projects today.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. So I've been looking at this little part of me that that I talked about on Thursday that feels this sadness and this it's just kind of this sad, lonely feeling. And it was amazing. So much came up just from watching her. I did some self-facilitating, some teacher, and some recording, and kind of found out that that little person liked to be called Sweetie, and feels alone and scared when he's alone. It just likes company. Mm-hmm. Likes to be held. Feels really, really, really young. Like to maybe three or something, and just wants to be reassured and held, just like a little child, you know, wants his hand held and to be paid attention to. It's really that simple. And this little person loved being facilitated. She was being paid attention to. And then kind of came back to it over and over, checking in with this little person, and throughout the day I could even hear him kind of, I was folding some towels, and I heard him say that he really liked the blue towels. I was like, oh, that's really nice. I like those too. And this one really likes the smell of the dish soap. It really likes, like colors and textures and soft things and smells. It feels so tender and beautiful being there with this one. And the emotion that kind of comes along with this one that I've noticed now is a great cue for realizing, okay, the sweetie's here and could use some attention, is this kind of like this heartache kind of feeling, this like achy, really tender, achy sadness. I guess it's how I'd describe it in words, but it feels like in the second chakra, just this kind of energy fluttering around. The really great thing that I've seen is that the voices and self-hate have been taking over that kind of emotional energy, and trying to use it to mean something else, to mean something. And it, according to the voices, it always means there's something wrong, and that feeling shouldn't be there. And then you have to do something to get rid of it and fix it right away. And here's a whole list of different things you can do. And none of them are particularly helpful. Some of them involve like running screaming from the monastery. and then like any other variety of distractions. You know, like, gosh, if I could just like go to the mall or like drink a beer or like talk to this one person on the phone or anything, you know, to just distract or calm or like somehow cure this feeling. And this is the really creepy thing. I get this image that's in one of Sherry's books of that like creepy monster hand of conditioning holding a little baby. Is here's this emotion. Here's this little child that needs some attention and love. And then the one that shows up to take care of it is conditioning, like, we really need to take care of you. We really need you to feel better. So what we really need to do is this. Mm-hmm. And boy, it's been helpful noticing that.
Wow, yeah, just really huge to see that the sensation connected with when Sweetie is there.
Yeah.
And to actually go to this place of acknowledgement and giving the attention to Sweetie. And yeah. Sweetie is just crazy, rather than actually being pulled off to do the 101,000 distracting things that, you know, self-hate would say would help with that sensation.
Right. It's been, it's taken a lot of attention, and recording and listening has helped a lot to untangle kind of what's what, because that emotion comes up, and then there's this real sense of feeling longing that goes along with it. And then the voices are real quick, it's subtle, it's sneaky, and they put in this content, like what I'm longing for is this thing that I don't have now, because I'm stuck here at the monastery, and if I could just have that, then it would be okay. And I'm seeing that, okay, well, these are two different things going on here. There's the real emotion. There's Sweetie's experience, and then there's that being co-opted and used for diabolical purposes. Or, you know, I see how my whole life, that one feeling, that sensation, has been used by conditioning, so conditioning can kind of have control of the human. Mm-hmm. And gosh, that's just helpful. And the part I'm working with right now and recording and listening about is that it's that leap of faith, that actually not hankering after something else and not trying to get something else, that's not what actually takes care of Sweetie, but just being right here and dropping it and getting quiet.
Mm-hmm. Just be here with the sensation.
Yeah, let it be. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to practice. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Krista.
So I've been looking, since we spoke just a few moments ago, about why this part of me feels so unworthy. And I've seen some things I thought I would share, which is, so I've been working with my mom. One of my goals with my mom is that before she dies, she sees herself as valued.
Sees herself as valued by you, or?
Life.
Life.
Because she still lives in the story, that she's not, and you know, then she can't take in any of the success of her accomplishments, and she's not chosen, and blah, blah, blah. Even though it's not true, but she lives in that story. She's 83, so, you know, any time is good to shift. And I'm making progress with my goal, because she's making progress. So, but I see, she, you know, there's regression that happens here. Like, anyway, so, but my mom never thought she was attractive. She never saw herself as, she always thought, saw herself as less than. So I see now in my life, now that I've shifted and I'm no longer like my mother, I see that all my life I felt like my mom, like that I was never pretty or worldly or, you know, I was always making up for something. Mm-hmm. And so, you know how identities are, if you believe that, because no amount of external anything will change it, right? And so, this person who I have this relationship with that's so challenged right now for me, to me, she's really beautiful and really worldly. Mm-hmm. And so I look at, like, what is the power that that has over me? Why would I so much get caught up? And that's what I see, that part of me is like my mother. And, you know, here's somebody who's beautiful and worldly, and somehow then I become this unworthy little person.
She's the part that doesn't, you know, felt pretty or... there was something else you're saying. You said that you, and I don't remember what it was, but that you had that going on for a while. That you just
valued. Yeah. I mean, for a long while, like 40 years.
40 years.
Or 45, 48. So it's not that long. 45 years. I remember. I mean, I can remember when it changed. You know, just quite recently. Oh wow, I'm not that anymore. Mm-hmm. Hmm. But obviously still in that because I'm in this situation,
you know.
And I, whether it's some help. So anyway, I'm going to still do the same thing, but I wanted to share about that. My mom's coming to visit today.
Mm-hmm. That's time seeing your mom's coming to visit.
It is. So my mom, she, her main, I call her addiction. She's addicted to periodicals. I call them all the, like, something like constant articles, because they're not periodic. They don't come periodic. And there's this addiction, absolute addiction, to reading about everything that's wrong in the world and knowing about it. And so I teach her, I'm like, oh, there you are, know your addiction. But I see that. To me, it's that process of that constant taking in of that information then keeps that structure in place of not, you know, being valued and not, you know, valued as a person. And somehow, if you know enough, that's going to make up for something, which it doesn't. Because we know, because here we are, not reading the periodicals, but... So yeah, so that's going to be my challenge. I think it would be a good challenge for me to see if I can be with her and see how that unworthiness shows up.
So just being, it seems like you have a little more insight into that 5-year-old and, you know, what took place, what was the belief that she had that made her feel unworthy. So taking the opportunity today to just look at, watch for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some stuff that I've seen in the conversation. When I was looking at the, can't remember exactly how it was phrased, but so my version of it is this process that I look at around how can I get the most out of it. And I guess it was in the conversation around the little person having so much energy and enthusiasm for so anything. Mm-hmm. I could really relate to that, I think. And then how conditioning perverts it in whatever way it does.
And I could really relate to the, one of the ways it perverts it is I've got to be in, like, include, like, participate in everything, or I'll miss something. I think I've talked before about the very vivid memory I have from kindergarten where I was sick, like throwing up sick. And I remember in the morning before school, I threw up and I said to my mom, I promise it's the last time. I won't throw up again. I can go to school and college. And really being, seriously remembering, I don't want to miss it. Good. But not even like, it's so much fun, I don't want to miss it. I think that was a piece of it, but like, what's going to happen that I'm not going to be in on? Things like that are so helpful because it's like, oh yeah, it's definitely karma. I mean, because how much could have happened by the time I was 5 that would have put something so strongly in place that I'd be throwing up and insist I have to go to school so that I don't miss anything. You know, for me, that's really, it helps me not take it personally when it shows up in the adult form because it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
there's
there when I was 5.
Really ancient here. But I had such an interesting day yesterday where there's tons to do and sort of a little bit of at least choice around the order in which things could get done and tons of enthusiasm for doing them, and I watched that process come in. So it feels like it starts with a, hey, there's this, yay, fun. And then the perversion of it is, okay, now let's see, if I could do that, and then if I could finish it by then, and then this would happen, and then, and it's like, wow, that is really not fun.
So it just goes to this place of kind of like, well, conditioning takes it over by trying to direct that energy into a program for the day.
Yeah, managing it. Because I just had this image of, in the conversation before, of like, you know, now, okay, now, oh, if you're going to do this, then you could do this, and it could look this way. It's like a bigger kid, like a little kid, it feels like a really little kid, sort of a trail of disaster behind them. You know, start this, and then, like, forget it. Start building the blocks. And then I don't even remember that I was doing that, and I'm onto the sandcastle. And the blocks are over here half done. There's nothing about, like, you know, I never finished that block. Should really go back to that block sort of a thing. And of course, there's the middle way of like, it's not just about being a little kid and creating disasters behind me, but I just got this image yesterday of when I feel that energy arise of how can I get the most out of anything, just stop. And just sort of this, for just having a commitment, just as a practice, not as sort of an ending place, but okay, we're just going to sit until that passes. Because, of course, that drives the system in.
I was going to say, that must just drive conditioning over the top, you know.
Because we're on a program.
We're on a program. We've got to get such and such done, and then she just stops.
And the thing that the process wants is to get ahead of life. Like, it's possible to do X, Y, and Z. Now, I'm already on Z, and it's and I don't even know what to say. Like, really, we should only be on one, but I've already gotten ahead of one, kind of. And to just get it, that is never, ever, ever, ever going to lead anywhere but suffering. And so to just for a while practice, especially on a Sunday, it's such a perfect time to practice it. And when that comes in, just sit down until the energy passes, and then we'll get up again and go on with our lives.
Yeah, just seeing the similarity between, you know, okay, I've got Z done, and I'm traditionally, you know, it's the same thing of like, just that if I accomplish this thing out in the future, you know, then I'm going to be happy, and, you know, it's just that.
Yeah, exactly. Then I'm going to be happy, then I'm going to be at peace, then I'm going to be relaxed.
Then
right?
I'm going to be able to relax, then I'll have the life I want, and, you know.
Okay, yeah. we're going to stop, and we're going to practice the end result. And then we'll pick it back up.
Yeah, it's possible to have the life we want right now.
Yep.
Whether we're on X, Y, Z, or A.
Yeah, because it's really, you know, it's back to what, a little bit of what we talked about on Thursday night, that you know, this is just so big. You know, this, we don't even know why we're here and what we're made of, and, you know, any of that. So really, how could it be about this like list that I'm going to get ahead of for the day? Because I'm going to, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. Thank you.